What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Web3 with a Splash of Wine podcast, where we talk about blockchain technology, DeFi, NFTs, and all kinds of other Web3 vibes. This show is for entertainment purposes only, and nothing said on the podcast should be taken as financial or legal advice. Let's dive into it. GM, y'all. Welcome to the Web3 with a Splash of Wine podcast. This is your host, Jivko. I'm part of a blockchain development company called LimeChain and a co-founder of EnterDAO. And this is actually the first episode of the podcast, and we have a very special guest today, JP Mullin, who is a prolific builder, co-founder of MantraDAO, co-founder of SomaDAO. He invests at a fund called Unknown VC, and he's also one of the first OG contributors to EnterDAO. JP, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. Happy to be here. Obviously, we've been working with you guys on a bunch of different things within MantraDAO, within EnterDAO, etc. So really, really happy to be here and have a chat.
Yep. Pleasure is all mine. Cool. Just for the audience, can you give an intro of who you are and what's your background and how did you get into crypto?
Yeah, sure thing. So I'm from the States originally. I've been in Asia. I'm based in Hong Kong currently. Been in Asia for about 7-8 years now. So I actually, when I was living in Europe, so I was living in Madrid, a buddy of mine, Trey Tomlinson, shout out to Trey, like told me about Bitcoin and said this thing has, you know, gone crazy in price. And I think this was like 2012, 2013. I was still in uni, in college. And at that time it was like, you know, you can either buy Bitcoin or you can, or I can like buy beer or weed or something, you know? So I didn't have like so much money at the time. But occasionally I was like, okay, this thing's interesting. I don't really understand it. But I put a little bit of money in back then. Obviously that was my first foray. Didn't ever change into life-changing money or turn into life-changing money, but it was a good kind of experience. Fast forward a little bit later, I'm living in Germany doing B-school. And at that point in time, I was still like on a kind of a traditional finance path. And I was like, okay, I want to do M&A or I want to do private wealth management or whatever. My dad was a banker. And then I got kind of, I did some management course, and there was a bunch of different fintech company case studies. And I was like, okay, this is cool. I've always been into tech. I think it's interesting. I like finance. You know, I always felt relatively technologically savvy, although I'm not a technical person. So that was like my first kind of foray into that. And then it became like kind of this interesting thing that kind of stuck in my head. Fast forward again, I'm in Shanghai. I'm doing the second master's of my master's degree program. And I'm like smack dab in the middle of China, like right when WeChat Pay, Alipay is starting to become a thing. And I was like, wow, this is crazy. You see this consumer, you know, app on your phone, like billions of freaking people are using it, and then no one's carrying cash anymore. And then it kind of all kind of came full circle. And I was like, wow, well, like money and the concept of, you know, currencies and financial transactions is going to all become digital. And then again, at the time I finished my my master's program, started working at a bank. And I was actually like one of the first white people or Laowai is what they're called, foreigners to ever work at this bank, Chinese state-owned investment bank. And one of my colleagues, shout out Dr. Lee, was like mining ETH at his desk. Should not have been doing that. So hopefully I didn't just dox him, but
he's not,
Dr. Lee's a homie though. So he's good. He's not going to get in trouble, I'm sure. But he was mining ETH at his desk, and kind of the little team that we kind of got put into was basically tasked with setting up a emerging technology research department and looking at all these different emerging techs, including blockchain, crypto, machine learning, all like automation, everything. And I was like, okay, well, I've had this interest in, you know, crypto for some time. Obviously, you know, since I first got into it, it had progressed. And that was the first time where I was like, okay, I have the opportunity to really kind of like put some effort professionally behind it. Then I started doing a bunch of meetups. This is like 2016, 2017 in China. Then I was doing some meetups, like English language meetups in Shanghai. Got involved with like the NEO guys back when they were Ant Shares. So before it went like absolutely fucking crazy. And then kind of the rest is history. Got involved with the company, that shall not be named. So I'm not going to give them props. Moved down to Hong Kong, set that business up. That blew up spectacularly. I got left holding the bag. But that was also a good experience, to kind of figure out how to deal with, you know, struggle in entrepreneurship, like significant struggle in entrepreneurship. And fast forward to where we are today, you know, founding MantraDAO with, you know, Will and Rodrigo, my other co-founders, moving on to Soma Finance, which is kind of a joint venture between Mantra and a U.S. broker dealer. So it's a kind of a regulated DeFi, if you want to call it like that. And then, you know, with that, we've seen a lot of different opportunities within the space to invest in. You know, obviously we were early investors in EnterDAO and, you know, a bunch of them. So, you know, have made a small friends and family fund that's done quite well. So looking to raise fund, unknown VC fund too, for some big bucks. So that's where we're at today.
Nice. It's definitely an interesting path. And we've all been through the early struggles, and especially the crypto winter of 2018, 2019.
It was cold.
It was damn cold. Let's dive into MantraDAO. Can you give an overview of what MantraDAO is, and then we can dive a bit deeper into some of the things that you guys are doing there?
Sure. Yeah. So, like, when we first came up with the idea for MantraDAO, like, quite literally, the first concept was a very high level. Someone told us, like, maybe we should do MakerDAO on Polkadot, like, you know, a multi-collateral CDP. Built on a cross-chain interoperable protocol such as Polkadot. So that's the original, like, 10,000-mile, you know, high-level concept. And then obviously it's really developed since then into essentially kind of like a retail-focused DeFi DAO of sorts, that really wants to create as many different kind of DeFi products on as many chains as possible. So originally we were meant to launch on Polkadot. Obviously that didn't happen. It's taken a little bit longer to launch, you know, than we initially anticipated. We were like the first Polkadot project to launch as an ERC-20, because we were supposed to be a dApp, right? And we're like dependent on a chain. We got a lot of shit for it, to be honest, but it was like totally one, maybe a little naive, and just two, like, not malintent on our side. But like, we were like, okay, we raised money for this thing. Like, we hustled our ass off to get this thing, this concept off the ground. We know what we can do. No one really believed in us, to be completely honest. But we had so much hype because it was like Polkadot's coming out. This is like August 2020. Polkadot's launching. DeFi's like having its, you know, summer, DeFi summer of last year, which was also nuts. So like, our timing was just impeccable. So we had to launch on Ethereum. Because we had this roadmap that we like put out that was extremely optimistic potentially, but we hit everything, and I'll get into that a little bit later. But we put this roadmap out and we're like, well, we have to do something. So we launched it all on Ethereum, planning to bridge to Polkadot. Still obviously working on stuff with you guys on that, which we'll again get to later in the podcast. But anyway, like, at its core, Mantra is just this suite of DeFi products geared towards retail users. And, you know, originally it was meant to be like just one dApp. It's since become almost like a dApp of dApps, because we have so many different kind of products. We have a launchpad, we have staking, we have a validator node business, which is completely separate. We have a money market lending product. We have a kind of a lottery pool thing, all these different things. And that's kind of where we're at today. And we've launched a bunch of different versions on a bunch of different chains. And we're looking to, you know, continue to, one, decentralize the DAO, and two, kind of further add permissionless elements to the product suite.
Nice. And you guys are one of the pioneers in what I like to call like multi-chain DeFi. Like, obviously when the whole DeFi thing blew up 2020, it feels like ages ago, but it was like a year and something. Yeah, like this whole thing blew up 2020, and it was all on Ethereum initially. Since then, we've had an explosion of L1s gaining a bit of traction. But you guys are one of the few DeFi protocols that are doing stuff and operating products that are live and have actual TVL on a bunch of chains. Mm. I obviously think that the future is multi-chain. Sure. Not, like, I'm not a fan of maximalism.
Yep.
What chains are you guys active on right now? And so what other chains you guys are trying to basically explore going forward?
Yeah, absolutely. So obviously Ethereum, Binance Smart Chain, Polygon, we're about to launch Solana, we're about to launch Terra. We have Hecko products, but we've never launched them publicly. We built it and then never launched it. What else? We're looking at Avalanche, of course. We're looking at Arbitrum and Optimism, Phantom. Any EVM thing is kind of easy, to be honest. So those are interesting. The two big ones that, I mean, I'm a huge lunatic. So for me, Terra's massive. I know Solana's obviously a really super cool ecosystem as well. We're pretty big into that. And obviously, we'll be working with you guys as well on Mantra Chain. So there's lots of interesting things to come with that. But
hopefully, alert.
Yeah. We've been like, I've been dropping hints in Telegram and Discord and stuff, but we don't talk too much about it yet.
Yeah. Let me know if we need to beep it out later on.
No worries. I'm also not, we're pretty transparent with shit. So just,
Yeah, well, I also want to touch base on this real quick. The last thing you mentioned, that you guys are transparent. So when I look at what you guys are doing, you guys are basically the epitome of community-driven. You've been catering to the Mantra community, which is called the Sherpas. And you guys have been basically doing everything community-first. You're really open. You even have your like vesting contract and addresses published and everything. Can you talk about how Mantra is governed? I know that you guys have the council, which you're a member. There are also a bunch of other members. Like, would be really curious to basically get the bigger picture of the Mantra governance.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, because it's on Ethereum, we still kind of use a form of soft governance for decisions. That's absolutely one of our biggest goals for 2022, is to really build out our kind of governance model. And we do, you know, pretty much everything with feedback from the community. Not always formally feedback, because that would just be a fucking nightmare. And obviously you need good kind of institutions, but like kind of forums for discussion and for, you know, kind of community leaders to kind of rise up and give feedback on certain things. That being said, we obviously always sound the community on any number of different things before we make changes, as much as possible. You know, as we mentioned, there's a kind of a council multi-sig. Currently 3 out of 5. We'll definitely be adding people to that. And it's kind of interesting. So one of the things that you know, we're kind of gearing up to do is that there's elements of our product suite that are really DeFi, right? Like there's the launchpad, there's the kind of the staking, there's the yield farming, there's the launchpad, there's whatever, like all these kind of really DeFi kind of primitive elements. Then you have this kind of business, which is the validator node business, which isn't really DeFi. It's kind of more Web3, which is supporting kind of like roughly 20 chains, I think, on various proof of stake kind of validator networks. And we're in the process of restructuring everything, because obviously, like, we're operating in, I mean, we have people in Hong Kong, we have people in Australia, we have people in Europe, we have people in the United States, like kind of all over the place. And you literally, you know, you still need to employ people, right? Like even for myself, I am American, I'm living in Hong Kong. I need to be legally eligible to work here. And that means you need to sign a contract with a company that pays your salary, or at least a representative salary in cash to allow me to work here. Unfortunately, cannot just take my entire salary in crypto. I would love that. but because of these things, you know, we have literally a kind of entity structure all over the place, right? Like it's really crazy. So one thing that we're looking at doing is restructuring this into a way that we can take elements of this DeFi product suite and really make that DAO centric and kind of community governed on chain, et cetera, et cetera. And I think that'll also go along with the launch of Mantra Chain, because obviously we want to have, you know, a validator set that is really participating in a cost-effective way on various decisions within the project, within the network, et cetera, et cetera. But on the other side, we have entities and, you know, kind of other areas of value capture that might not be, I mean, they still might be in token form, but they could occur on the balance sheet of something that's not, you know, in this DeFi product suite or within this DAO, right? So for us, the cool thing that we're kind of doing is that we'll be able to kind of run things on a DeFi, you know, DAO basis. But at the same time, we also have this kind of real world connection that also allows us to touch things such as, you know, licensed DeFi or regulated DeFi. It also allows us to go out and raise equity capital. I mean, we're going to gear up for a big, big raise next year for Mantra, or for the equity vehicle behind Mantra, kind of like how, you know, Terra has Terraform Labs. We have our own labs. That helps develop the overall ecosystem, helps build out these products, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So those are kind of the two things that we're looking at the moment. And I'm really excited that we're able to kind of do both. That's kind of the greatest part about, you know, playing in both worlds, I think.
Yeah, well, for sure. And you mentioned something about basically regulations that is a challenge both for, I mean, it's obviously a challenge for Mantra as a organization to basically onboard contributors, pay out salaries and stuff like that. But we've also seen that regulation in DeFi has been an increasingly important topic over the past year. So the SEC has been basically waking up to DeFi. They've been going at different companies. We see that this is a real issue, like on our end, we're contributors to Universe, the XYZ DAO, and there we did an NFT drop with which we donated about 1,000 ETH, I think $4 million or something for lobbying in the US. But we still see that we're far, far away from having a basically streamlined regulation on how these organizations should run. And also, what are also the implications for users that are basically dabbling into DeFi? Like, how do they pay taxes? How do they accounting? All this stuff. And I know that you guys are also passionate about this and been working on something called Soma Finance, which kind of tackles the regulatory problem in DeFi. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's absolutely a kind of critical thing for us and one of our key theses about just how the entire space is going to work. You know, some kind of anti-government, more, you know, maybe open-minded kind of libertarian idealists out there might not agree with some of the things I'm about to say, but, you know, I'm a pragmatist, and we do see that, you know, the regulator has, at least in our case, been willing to work with us if we also are willing to play ball with them on certain things. Like, I don't think that everything is black and white and that, again, you need to have, like, totally no regulations at all. There's a lot of ways you can kind of play regulatory arbitrage a little bit. So we do that as well. And the project that you mentioned is Soma Finance. Basically, I think it was like almost 2.5 years ago. We meaning the broker dealer that I'm associated with, got a very special license issued by FINRA and the SEC. That essentially allows us to do private placements of tokenized securities, essentially, on blockchain. And the kind of the amazing thing about this license that we haven't seen anyone else being able to replicate is that it is so broad and so encompassing that it really allows us to do the two things that no one else has been able to do with respect to kind of regulated securities on chain or on blockchain in the United States. And I mean, by regulated securities, I mean, basically everything that is not Ethereum, Bitcoin, and arguably some of the stable coins, although, you know, Tether, USDC are also up for grabs on whether they're going to be deemed as securities or not in the United States, right? At the moment, at least. So what it basically allowed us to do is touch everything from institutional investor all the way down to retail through Regulation D, which is U.S. accredited, all the way down to Regulation CF, Regulation Crowdfunding, which is U.S. retail. And basically just calling a spade and saying this is going to be deemed as a security, but we have the ability to issue it compliantly on blockchain, on any chain, actually. Most, by most, I mean like one or two that we've seen that have gotten something similar. They've been able to do like a Reg D, which is one filing on Hyperledger or some permission chain that they own. Again, no one gives a fuck. No offense. But we can do it on anything. That could be on Ethereum. That could be on Solana. That could be on whatever. That's really like the golden goose, right? So institutional retail and any different chain out there. And what this has allowed us to do is create all the kind of awesome DeFi primitives that are out there. So that's the, you know, AMM permissionless DEX. That's the money market lending protocol. That's, you know, issuance platform and launchpad, staking and yield farming, all these types of things that are great. But it allows, well, again, compliant participation from U.S. individuals, as well as just kind of global individuals for assets that they're not able to currently touch, right? So a lot of the world is not able to actually trade, at least easily, you know, Tesla stock or Apple stock or anything like that, right? With the Soma DEX and the platform that we're, the AMM platform that we're making, we're actually tokenizing like real world paper securities, such as Tesla, Facebook, Coinbase, Galaxy Digital, you know, whatever, MicroStrategy, all the, you know, the cool ones that people want to trade and play with. But we're tokenizing it in a one-for-one basis, holding it in centralized custody with a broker-dealer, a licensed entity. But then you have a one-to-one representation on chain. And where that differs from a synthetic is it's much more capital efficient. It's not an over-collateralized basket that represents the asset, but it's actually a one-for-one. You also have much more rights to the benefits of that asset, such as you retain dividend payments, you retain voting rights. But then you have the benefits of all of blockchain, which is 24/7, 365, fractionalization, you know, you name it, you can do whatever you want with it kind of thing. Yield farming, staking, whatever. And anyone around the world can participate as long as you're not from like, you know, North Korea or, you know, someplace like that. That's essentially Soma in a nutshell. And we basically, you know, again, created DeFi products that have a kind of centralized KYC AML wrapper. So there's a compliance wrapper on it. And once you're in this walled garden, this is what, kind of how we talk about it. You have a walled garden of compliance. And once you're within it, you can play and you can do whatever you want. As long as you don't mess up while you're in there, you're fine, right? And that's a pretty cool thing because at least up until now, a lot of institutional players in the United States have not been able to participate in on-chain DeFi because that AML KYC concern. And we solve that while still maintaining, you know, some of these primitives that are kind of inherent to decentralized finance.
Nice. No, this I personally think it's amazing. Like if you've been in the blockchain space long enough, you would know that in 2017, like with the ICO boom, we had all these like utility tokens that most of them obviously went to zero. Some of those evolved into governance tokens. However, in 2018, 2019, there was this whole narrative about security tokens that never actually came to fruition. Like a lot of projects tried to do stuff with them. Most of them failed due to regulatory reasons. So I think there is like a lot of promise. And if you guys manage to crack that, I think it's going to be a huge market. And when you say on-chain securities, have you guys decided on which chain are you going to build it? Is it going to be multi-chain? What's your vision behind basically the blockchain there?
Yeah, so maybe just two points. So the first one, specifically to your points about this whole STO boom that never came to fruition, my personal opinion was that there was two kind of reasons for it. One, everything was done in such a centralized way then. It was all done via like centralized trading experiences. And it was, so that was the first issue. There was no kind of DeFi incentives built in. So that's number one. Number two, it was basically locking out everyone who wasn't an accredited investor. It was only able for like the rich to potentially get richer. It never ended up happening because you didn't actually have anyone trading or using it at all. but if you solve those two issues, which we can, you know, that's where the golden goose is, in my opinion. In terms of where we're building at the moment, we're definitely launching first on Ethereum, 100%. That is absolutely the chain that the regulators get the most at the moment. And by regulators, I mean FINRA and SEC. You know, not to cast stones, but a lot of the people in those institutions just are not like, I mean, there's people obviously who know their stuff, but the average Joe within those institutions is not like super familiar with Solana or Terra or, you know, any number of different kind of layer ones or, yep, or different kind of low cost, low speed options, sorry, fast options, scalable options. So launching on Ethereum first, very quickly moving to, you know, a layer two such as Arbitrum or Optimism, another EVM compatible chain. Again, probably an actual layer two, not like a Polygon or something like that, just because it's, again, a bit easier to explain. And, you know, again, we'd be more than happy to launch another different chain. But that being said, there's actually significant work involved to explain how these different systems work to regulators. You know, so we're not necessarily going to do it for free. If there's willing partners who want to work with us, like if Solana wants to work with us, for example, obviously we'd be more than happy to, right? And, you know, we could really legitimately get them a rubber stamp from FINRA and the SEC that says this is a compliant chain in our book. And anything could be built on that. So that's potentially cool. It's not necessarily meant to be a moneymaker. Obviously, that's not really the end goal there. It's just, you know, if you're spending time on something, you need to be compensated.
Yeah, for sure. When I look at all of this, I can't help but think about basically all the things that can be built around it. Like, obviously, DeFi is all about interoperability and composability, and you have people building on top of like Uniswap, for example, or the other AMMs and lending protocols. How would that work in the Soma case? Because obviously you would have like a KYC and AML layer. Would that restrict some of the interoperability? Let's say if I want to start create, like obviously you would have the tokenized securities, let's say Tesla or whatever, if I want to start creating a derivative protocol around that or something like that, or like a prediction market, would I be able to? How do you see that playing out? Just
really good question. I mean, obviously our whole thesis is that we want to enable as much kind of composability and usability as possible, particularly with the Soma token, but at the same time, you know, without kind of going, you know, afoul of whatever the regulator is, you know, whatever their stance is at the moment, right? Obviously, that's a very fine line. And, you know, without trying to necessarily dodge the question, you know, we will have, or we're planning to have a public API and SDK for Soma. So, you know, other participants can come in and work within the system. I think probably the bigger way that I think Soma will expand with other kind of players or third parties is actually through kind of more institutional acceptance, meaning like prime brokerage, meaning kind of institutional layer, maybe an institutional settlement layer, you know, maybe even a bank-to-bank system built on an AMM. I mean, that would be pretty fucking cool. That's probably a little bit off, but could you imagine, you know, JP Morgan executing a trade with Goldman Sachs on, you know, some sort of AMM?
Yeah, that would be good.
That would be lit, right? Obviously, that's far off, but like these types of things are absolutely things that, and again, prediction markets, derivatives protocols, these things are all, you know, products that institutions want as well, right? You know, so that being said, there's also elements that require licensing, you know, particularly when you're talking about derivatives in the U.S., right? That's a highly licensed business. That being said, if you can support, you know, those licensing and the compliance requirements, of course we want to have as many different you know, functionalities and features and products within Soma as possible. In the beginning, the three main ones that we focused on were obviously the trading element, so AMM and DEX, issuance or launchpad, and lending and borrowing. Those are kind of like the three core pillars that we wanted to start with, and then everything else around that can kind of evolve.
Nice. This makes a lot of sense. And to basically take a step back from what you guys are building, and just want to ask you a couple of questions on the overall direction of the DeFi space. So obviously what you guys are doing is pretty self-evident of where do you think the space is going. So first, like, you guys are doing a whole lot of stuff multi-chain.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously this is a trend that will only become bigger. And the second thing is more regulatory compliant DeFi products.
Mm.
But something which is really been popping up lately, and you've seen it all over Twitter and like the blogs and everything, is everyone is talking about the so-called DeFi 2.0. Mm. Are you buying this narrative? So it's not clear what exactly does it mean, but it encompasses like a bunch of these up and coming projects like Tokemak and Olympus with its like countless forks and everything. It's a funny thing, but what do you think DeFi 2.0 really is, and what do you see? Because you're also an active investor, what do you look for in the next wave of DeFi products?
Yeah, absolutely. To be honest, I hate the name DeFi 2.0, and people are going to call me a hater because
that's understandable. Right?
Because you're DeFi 1.0. Yeah, whatever. I don't think I still just think it's DeFi, right? There's no, I don't think there's 1.0, 2.0, 5.0. It doesn't matter to me. I think there's been some really cool innovations from that. But I don't know if it warrants a totally another subsect of DeFi. It still revolves around the same things. The protocol owned liquidity elements of Olympus DAO are very cool in my mind, or protocol rented liquidity from Tokamak. They all have these different, you know, systems in place that are very cool. I have a shitload of the other OHM. Obviously, we are OHM, OM, they're OHM. Like, they're the science OHM, and we're the religious one. I like OHM, both of them. And so, I think they've done a really cool thing there. Am I, like, buying or selling that deep 2.0 narrative? Not necessarily. I think there's going to be a lot of cool alpha opportunities within that. You know, if this innovation continues, because people are going to, like, just like everything in crypto, it's all fucking hype cycles and trends and things, right? Like, metaverse is hype now. So everyone's, you know, metaverse, and then NFTs are hype, and then DeFi is hype. And then, you know, it's all just like ding, 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 ding. So I can see how, like, people branding themselves as 2.0 are gonna, you know, attract attention. Is that, like, totally deserved just because of the name? Not so sure. I think it, again, comes down to case-by-case basis. These kind of innovations and additional elements that they're bringing to the table are cool, and they're super useful. And, you know, if I could go back and, you know, do the same thing, I would too as well, right? Like, they've done some cool stuff, and I think they're taking the space forward. I'm just not sure the name is totally legit.
Yeah, I get that. And something else which I've been noticing in the DeFi space is that slowly it has been maturing in a way that allows more, I don't want to use the word B2B because I don't think it's relevant in a decentralized, in the decentralized space. But so far, DeFi has been really retail focused, and we've been starting to hear about more, let's say, DAO to DAO, like organization to organization use cases. So a few months ago, I think it was Pleaser DAO that took a loan from the Iron Bank to finance some stuff. And yesterday, like a couple of days ago, we had the news that Alameda, which is one of the biggest funds in crypto, to fund their trading operations, they basically cut out the big banks, even though they're quite profitable. They cut out the big banks and basically struck an on-chain deal with Maple Finance, which is going to provide them funding. Do you see going forward more of this happening, let's say more institutional or business side lending in DeFi?
I think so. I mean, I just saw, again, a couple of days ago, like, potentially there's a merger between Rari and Fei protocol. I mean, I'm not going to comment too much on that because I don't know enough. I think just as a concept, it's really, really cool. I for sure think there's going to be more of that. I mean, absolutely. Realistically, there's, like, so many replications of so many different types of, you know, simple kind of DeFi building blocks that eventually, like, ones that have been able to scale, you know, potentially generate revenues, recurring revenues, actually, not just, like, bullshit, you know, once-off type of things, because there's a lot of that. Again, TVL numbers are great, but doesn't necessarily mean you're making money. And the ones that have been able to been successful at that will then have awesome either kind of merger or even acquisition opportunities of buying out other DAOs, right? I think that's going to be a pretty cool concept. You know, how you're going to be able to do that without a banker or an intermediary, maybe that's done through DAO governance. I mean, that's a pretty cool thing, right? It cuts out a lot of different rent-seeking costs and whatnot. Bullshit, to be honest. Seeing how that will progress will be pretty sweet. I mean, if anyone's open to work with us, like, holla.
Nice. Yeah, and that means a lot coming from an ex-investment banker.
Fuck that. I've been down the rabbit hole for too long now.
I get it, but for sure, there are a bunch of, I think, projects, and there is a DAO called, I think, PrimeDAO, that is working basically on setting up frameworks and infrastructure for DAO-to-DAO deals on-chain. So that would be interesting to see how the whole space matures. But I think we're kind of an inflection point that we'll see more institutional lending and dabbing into DeFi.
Yep.
But again, we still need to clear some hurdles. Some of those are regulatory. Some of those are technological, like scalability and stuff like that. What do you see as the biggest hurdles for DeFi going forward, whether it's both on the retail and the institutional side?
Yeah, I mean, I really do think regulations are going to be a big, big hurdle. And going from, you know, I mean, realistically, like an informed crypto native population to, you know, people who have no fucking clue what Bitcoin is, what a blockchain is, what MetaMask is, you know, what yield farming is. You know, it's easy for us. And if you're into it, it's just like second nature, right? But for the uninformed population about crypto, like, it's not that easy to be your own bank. There's a lot of issues there. And there's a lot of, like, significantly potentially painful learning curves that you might encounter, like getting hacked, getting scammed, getting rugged. Like, all these different things happen all the time, even to people who've been in the space for a long time, you know? So
yep.
That's going to continue to be an issue. And just the user experience, UI, like, all this shit is way too complex for most people. So, like, again, scaling from, like, I don't know how many people are actively using DeFi. Let's just say, like, 25 million. Just throwing a number out there. I think there was 21 million MetaMask users, you know, monthly last month or something. I read that somewhere. So let's just say 25 active, roughly. How do you get 25 to 100? And then how do you get 100 to a billion? It's not the way that it currently is at the moment, because that's not going to scale that way. So that's one significant issue, in my opinion. And then I don't like harping on it too much, but regulation. It's going to be a continued issue, particularly for, you know, anyone who's an American, anyone who's building stuff in the US. Hopefully we'll be able to solve some of those pain points with Soma. But kind of the crazy anonymous, you know, out there DeFi stuff is absolutely not going to fly in the United States. It will never fly. If you're an American building a DeFi project nowadays, I mean, I'm doxed, I'm American, I'm out there. Like, it is what it is, and I'm cool with it. But, realistically, if you're trying to do something kind of like push the edge of the envelope, don't be named. Be anon for sure. And that's going to be what it's going to have to be. Like, you're going to have to pick one way or the other, red pill, blue pill kind of thing.
So you think 6-digit APYs are not going to fly in the US?
They might be. We might have some 6 digits on Soma. It still could be possible, but that's what we're trying to do. Actually, we're trying to bring that DeFi experience to a compliant kind of framework, but we have licenses and we're KYCing people and yada, 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 yada. Right. It's not like we're just able to do that because we can, or because we want to. It's because we actually, you know, can. That's definitely a big distinction in my book. So those are the two big things.
Nice. All right. So, being a super fun conversation, I don't want to keep these episodes too long. Is there something that you want to share to the community, or are you guys hiring? What you guys are looking for? Anything that
hiring fucking everyone. we're literally like, there's so many positions we're hiring for, both on the business, marketing, finance, legal, you know, tech, infra, DevOps, security, QA, Solidity, Rust. I mean, like, you name it, we'll hire it at the moment. I think we have a really cool project. We have a really cool community, really awesome community. We definitely fly under the radar now a little bit. People are sleeping on us, and I'm totally okay with that. I think because we've been really focusing on, at least in the last probably like 4 or 5 months on really getting things structured in the right way so that when we have, you know, this next leg up, I'm not just talking about price, but I'm just talking about like the level of products that we're going to be launching, the kind of the standard of everything, you know, it's going to be a whole different ballgame. So, you know, we're always looking for more contributors. We're always looking for cool community members. And, you know, come play on the MantraDAO platform, stake to our nodes. There's a lot of cool incentives. I mean, you can earn shitloads of money on MantraDAO if you know how to use it right.
Not financial advice.
Definitely not. Never. But it's true, man. Like we got a lot of projects and tokens that people don't know about. Right. And, you know, we got some cool shit going on, so don't sleep on us.
Yep. And if I'm relatively new to basically to crypto, how do I get into the SharePress community, the Mantra community members? Is it on Discord? Where are you guys most active?
Most active on Telegram, to be honest, just because we were live there in the beginning, and that's where a lot of our members are. I tend to stay out of the main channel just because it's like there's a lot of just kind of people asking just operational questions. But the trading channel is where it's at. I'm pretty active there. I mean, like really active. You know, chatting it up with the homies. So I would say Telegram for now. We want to move on to Discord a little bit more, and you know, holler at me on Twitter too.
Nice. Appreciate it, JP. Thank you for being on the podcast. Also, special shout out to Will and Rot building alongside you over the past few years. And yeah, I think that would be it. Appreciate you coming to the show, and I hope that we'll have another one soon.
Absolutely, man. Appreciate it. Thanks so much for having me. Thanks for all the... What's the EnterDAO community name? They have one?
We don't have a name, but it's a good one that maybe we need to find.
Need to find one.
Yeah, the right word.
Absolutely. Well, shout out to whoever, whatever their name ends up being. and GM to all the Chads out there.
GM Chads. Yeah. All right.